Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here at the Pop Culture Cosmos, Game Source, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, and the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate you listening and watching to all of our great shows wherever you are around the world. And if you can, please give us that 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, subscribe, follow, or do whatever it is that you can to support us right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos, Game Source, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, the Lakers Fast Break, Vampires and Vitae, Wizards and Wine with Wild Beyond a Witchlight, and everything that we do in the world of tabletop RPG or role-playing, as it were. Right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Go ahead and check us out today at Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook, where you get the latest news and trends in pop culture. And there's been a lot to talk about today. We'll get into that here in a sec. Plus also as well, our main site, popculturecosmos.wordpress.com, where you'll see a collection of all of our awesome shows. And of course, don't forget all the things that we do here at Pop Culture Cosmos. Go ahead and support us any way you can. And if you do, it's sincerely appreciate it. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos this time around without my good friend. She is the magistrate of all that is role-playing here at Pop Culture Cosmos. You got to go ahead and check out what she's doing today at Vampires and Vitae, plus also as well Wizards and Wine. That's available right now wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Check out the entire library after our show, of course. Please go ahead and do that. She is a fantastic role-playing, knowledgeable type person, and she even got a guest for us that even knows more about role-playing. It's my good friend indeed. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross, and Melinda had a great interview lined up, which we're going to play a little bit later on, with Alex Scheidler of the Desert of Shadows Las Vegas LARP group. How's it going today?
It's going very well. How are you?
Good, good, good. And on top of that, since I went to the Mint Collective major sports card show this past weekend at the MGM Grand Garden and Casino Convention Center here on the Las Vegas Strip, I want to get a chance to talk to a sports card expert, Rob Dolby, here later in the show and ask about his thoughts on the sports card scene and my observations on it as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up, a lot of good conversation. But I tell you what, Melinda, guess what dropped? All this great info that dropped last night when it concerns Star Wars. Did you get a chance to check it out?
I've checked out some of it, but it was a lot. So I have not gotten all the way through the pile yet.
Okay. Well, it was a lot. And it was Star Wars Celebration 2023, which is taking place across the pond. Such a great, great time everybody's having seemingly at Star Wars Celebration right now. And I want to ask you this first off, when it comes to Star Wars Celebration, you're really going to have a awesome time if you go to it, but you're there for the news. And it's funny because you're there, they announce the news, and then the rest of the show happens. And it's almost like, okay, we have all that great stuff up front, and then it's just like afterglow for the rest of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely how it feels. And, you know, even not being able to be there in person, you know, you still kind of get that feeling.
In London this time around.
Yeah, but I mean, there might be an element of FOMO in there, you know, fear of missing out on all the good stuff. But like you said, you know, people are really good about pushing information out. So, yeah, when we sit over here and just read the news, it's like, man, to have been in that room for that announcement.
Absolutely. And the biggest announcements were, here we go. And this, do you want to go ahead and hit the heavy stuff first, or do you want to go ahead and with some of the lighter stuff that's really cool as well, like Ahsoka, like talking about Star Wars Acolyte, all that stuff that's coming up in the not too distant future for Disney Plus? Or do you want to get to the meat of the bone type deal for what was announced with all the new movies coming up?
That's a tough question. Maybe can we go back and forth between like light, heavy? Can we mix it up that way?
Do my best on
that. All right.
So we'll go with the light first. And I think the first thing is it is Star Wars Ahsoka. The first trailer was shown off. and it was sent out to the rest of the world. It is available now. I actually can give you the link right there. If you're at Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook, you can go ahead and click on the link, and it's right there for you. It did showcase the Ahsoka character and a reunion of sorts for everyone that loves Star Wars Rebels. This is going to be the live action series Star Wars style for you. This is Dave Filoni. This is his dream of Star Wars Rebels coming to life. There's more Dave Filoni coming up in the not too distant future, but obviously his work with Star Wars, The Mandalorian, with him and Jon Favreau, those two together have built a juggernaut with The Mandalorian, and they are basically able to cash every single check that Disney wants to write on it, because while Disney may be cutting back in other areas of the Star Wars universe, or even the Marvel universe, or even the Disney universe in total, they're not stopping now with anything related to Dave Filoni.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they've gone all in, for sure.
Absolutely, because the Ahsoka, it had everything that you wanted. All the live-action versions of the characters that you've come to know and love in the Star Wars Rebels universe, they are now seemingly in that trailer, plus Grand Admiral Thrawn. Although you don't get to see his blue face, not yet. They right. I think they're saving that for the end of Mandalorian this season. I think they're going to probably go ahead and do that before they go ahead and showcase that in the Ahsoka series. But yes, you do get to see a lot of action. Ahsoka basically trying to do what she can as far as one of the last few remaining Jedi that's out there. So great to see, and well-deserved series, again, much beloved in the Star Wars Rebels universe. Dave Filoni's live-action version of Star Wars Rebels coming to life with Ahsoka. So that's probably one of the main things out of the television side. There was also, for the heavy side, was the big announcement of not one, not two, but three movies coming up in the Star Wars cinematic universe that are coming up. So, see how MCU and all that? Star Wars cinematic universe. And none of them was the reported Taika Waititi movie that we heard about last month in the news. None of them was based on the Kevin Feige or Patty Jenkins movies, which have either been shelved or put to the wayside. Mm-hmm. This was all about new projects that are underway, one of which was for Dave Filoni in a New Republic style movie, New Republic era movie. But it seems very familiar to me. And there's quite a possibility that the Ahsoka Mandalorian universes will collide in that movie, and possibly be the ending that we want to see for the Mandalorian.
I mean, that would be the poetic way to do it, right?
We've talked about that before as far as it ultimately going to the big screen.
Yeah, I think that that's the poetic way to do it. I think that's the correct way to do it. I think that The Mandalorian deserves some big screen time. And that's coming from somebody who is, I would consider myself a passive Star Wars fan. So I think that I can't be the only person who thinks that from the sidelines, you know.
I think that's a good move. I think that's a reward for how big The Mandalorian has become, not only the Ahsoka series, but this movie, granting him this movie to go ahead and do as he pleases. Although, again, it's set in the New Republic era, but I have a feeling it's going to tie in somehow to The Mandalorian. He's going to have that type of ending at some point in time. Grogu will be involved. You know it somehow.
Of course.
Yeah, so we're going to see something of that nature coming from a Dave Filoni movie down there. Again, Taika Waititi, that's the thing that was reported all over the place last month as far as a movie set from him, and that would be the first movie coming out. So I don't know what the status of that movie is at this point in time, if it's been shelved or if it's actually already, since it's been talked about, they didn't decide to mention it. But what they did mention was another movie in development, this time from the Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny director, James Mangold, who you know from Logan. I think it's probably the movie that you're most reminded of. But you're seeing him now in Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Conveniently, the second trailer dropped today. Lucasfilm, timing all these things out. what do you know? But yes, that's that dropped today. That second trailer looks really good, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with that. So James Mangold, the director of that movie, taking over for Steven Spielberg, he has now been given and granted a movie within the Star Wars universe as well, where this time, I think from him, it's going to be the Old Republic. If you're familiar with Star Wars, the Old Republic for the video games and books from the bygone era, as far as the birth or the inception of the Jedi. So you tell me your thoughts on this. We're going back in time for this one with a movie from James Mangold in the Star Wars universe.
Okay, how far back are we going, though?
We're going back to the birth, the dawn of the Jedi, possibly. That's what's rumored to be happening with this one.
That's
Old
cool.
Republic is, Old Republic is, it's old.
Yeah, I like that. I like that idea, you know, following the discovery of the Jedi and how all of their stuff happened. I think that'll be an interesting movie. Definitely a topic that I'm interested in for sure.
There's a mention of the upcoming television series outside of Ahsoka that are coming in 2024. First, starting off with Star Wars, The Acolyte, which was called by its creators where Frozen meets Kill Bill. So it's like one opposite to the other, but there's a 2024 release window that was revealed for it. So the second is Star Wars Andor season 2 is aiming for an August 2024 release date. And then last but certainly not least is Star Wars Skeleton Crew, which is going to feature Jude Law. And that one is actually underway as far as production. That one did not determine exactly when 2024. And the last major thing that was announced as far as a movie, one of the three movies that are definitely in the works already, according to Kathleen Kennedy, is a movie by Sharmeen Obaid Shenoy. Excellent director, so I'm looking forward to seeing what she has to offer. But, and I say but, this will focus on a movie about 15 years after the events of Rise of Skywalker. Now you're saying you want to go back into that universe and go into a world 15 years later with Rey as a Jedi Master, which, again, beloved characters, a lot of people love her character. Very divisive as far as where she came from, as far as the movies that are surrounded, because you either love those movies or you really hate those movies, kind of like the prequels themselves earlier in the 90s. You know, you either love them or hate them. And we saw from The Last Skywalker here at the show, we weren't exactly in love with that movie. In fact, we use it as a punchline in many of our ads. Your thoughts on this in regards to bringing Rey back, Daisy Ridley, as the Rey character 15 years later, as this now Master Jedi, maybe training a new generation of Jedis?
I hope that it's a bit of a redemption for both the actress and the character. I think that...
Well, it wasn't due to her. It was just whole story was written very poorly. You know,
of course.
Script, it was awful. You know, Finn, who I'd love to see. Well, okay, I'll go ahead.
Okay. So I would love to see a movie that she's a lead in be universally applauded. And I don't know that that's possible, no matter who is at the front of a Star Wars movie. I think that a lot of people are going to look for reasons to be upset about whatever you try to do in the Star Wars universe.
Because like I said, The Force Awakens, $2 billion movie.
Yeah.
Then it went to The Last Jedi, and you know, either love or hate that movie, of course. That one went down to about $1.5 billion, and then The Rise of Skywalker to $1 billion. I was just hoping, and I thought that that was the belief, and that was many of the ideas that was pitched to Kathleen Kennedy from what reports say, is that they were going to go into a future part of the Star Wars universe that was well beyond the Skywalker saga, which I was actually looking forward to.
Well, you know, this movie set 15 years after the events of the last movie. It's entirely possible that it's going to use elements of that to set up the movies that they've just announced. That seems to me like something that is possible, something that could happen, whether you're introduced to a character or a location or something that will tie it to the new movies coming.
but it's still Rey from The Last Skywalker. From
right.
That
but it could be the new Jedi for the new movies that you're talking about, for the new branch that's going to grow out of it.
Come on, Melinda.
You got to attach it all at some place or it's disjointed and it doesn't make any sense. Come on.
It is going to make a sense because you can say it's a long time ago. That scroll at the beginning of every Star Wars movie sets up everything for you. Come on.
They make you read the recap instead of showing it to you. That's the difference.
What are your thoughts out there on what went on and what was announced this weekend at Star Wars Celebration? Come on! Let us know if you really like everything set within a universe connected to each other, or would you like to have seen even one project announced set in a little bit different time frame in a different galaxy far, far away? Let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. But before we get to the Alex Scheidler and also as well Rob Dolby conversations, my friend, before we head on out, Super Mario Brothers movie is kicking some serious booty.
Yeah, it seems now, to be.
Yes. Yeah, from our Friday show, the expectations and the numbers I announced, they've been blowing those out of water. And it looks like it's going to get close to, domestically alone, close to $190, possibly $195, $200 million over the course of the next 5 days. And if you include Monday on top of it, you know, because a lot of kids are off Monday as well, like ours here
right,
in Las Vegas, you could seriously see by the time it getting through Monday domestically, not even talking about getting over 200, 225, and then you're talking about possibly even $400 million over a 5 to 7 day period worldwide, which would be a massive success for Nintendo and Universal, and most likely heading towards $1 billion, which is way beyond what a lot of people expected.
You know, you go to cartoon movies sometimes and there's always some kind of joke. There's always something that they put in there for the adults in the audience, right?
Yes.
Everything that I'm reading about the Super Mario Brothers is like, this is completely for kids.
Yeah, this is good for kids.
Yeah.
The critical reviews have been, you know, the hardcore critics are out there. They're trashing it. But the critics that are seeing it for what it is as far as an entertainment, family fun, kid movie are enjoying what it does. And it does respect the Nintendo properties, which is something you and I talk about when you talk about video game adaptations, which is most important to us. Does it respect the IP that it's taking from? That to me is most important. And I think it's done that. You know, I'm happy for Nintendo. I've been accused of being a Nintendo basher over the course of my years at GameSource and Pop Culture Cosmos, but I'm giving all the credits to due. They put their money, their time, and their property in the right hands with Illumination, who've done huge numbers with the Despicable Me franchise and are reaping the benefits and rewards again on another well-done video game adaptation.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's keep those well-done video game adaptations coming because, man, when they are bad, it's insulting.
Absolutely. This respects the property. And obviously, it's getting great cinema scores and people are talking about it. Good word of mouth. And obviously, that's why it's generating a lot of money this weekend. And again, we're looking at a possible 400 or more worldwide take in its first 5 to 7 days, which is absolutely great for a movie like this at a time like this. So, kudos to Universal and Nintendo and Illumination for the Super Mario Brothers movie. If you've seen it and have thoughts, or if you're going to go ahead and check it out, please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. And we're back at the show. It's Belinda Barkhouse-Ross and me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching and listening right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos, where we're heard around the world on radio stations worldwide right here, Pop Culture Cosmos. Thanks so much for watching and listening. And, of course, check us out on social media. And, of course, for the best and the latest and greatest in the world of pop culture, go ahead and check us out today, Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook. But I will tell you what, we are now entering a world of mystery. A world of magic, a world of fantasy that only the human imagination can come up with. As I guess the best way to put it was last year, or actually it was closing in on the end of 2021, when I saw the awesome series, which I spoke so highly of on this show, Hawkeye, that was on Disney Plus. And there were several scenes, and a key component of the background of the actual show itself takes place in the world of live action role play, otherwise known as LARP by its acronym. And I'll tell you what, I've always wanted to know more about live action role play. And I know Melinda knows more about that, but she brought someone who even knows more than her when it comes to the world of LARP. So Melinda, I take it over to you now. I send it to you. So I ask you, Melinda, who do you have on today's show to tell us more about the world of LARP?
So this is my good friend. I'm going to call him my good friend now. Alex, if you didn't know you were my good friend, congratulations. You've been promoted.
Right. You're one up on me.
Stop.
She's called me a lot worse.
But Alex is the guy behind what happens with a lot of the things that go down with the Desert of Shadows LARP here in Las Vegas. It's a Vampire the Masquerade LARP, and I can't imagine having to be one of the storytellers or even the point storyteller that all of these storytellers branch off of. And Alex, if I'm not mistaken, that's like in a very small bite-sized piece. That's your role, right? With Desert of Shadows.
Yeah, that would be a bite-sized piece of what we do over there. There's the building of the story, getting the sets all together, kind of calling the rules, adjudicating disputes. Then there's the out-of-character drama, which is a whole nother part of it. But it all adds together to be a kind of immersive adventure that lets people explore things that they really can't in real life.
True story. So what's the big difference, aside from not just sitting around a table, but the difference between like a tabletop RPG and taking it to like a LARP level? What are the biggest, well, I guess this is kind of the big question of the day, really. It's, you know, what's the big difference? What's the different approach that a storyteller has to take? You know, what are the storyteller expectations from players? You know, the easy questions.
I would say that from that perspective, in terms of the storyteller part, one of the biggest differences is in a tabletop setting, you are the world. You're the bad guys. You're the small bad guys you meet on the road. You're the big bad guys in the castle. You're the merchant. You're everything for six people. And in LARP, what you are is you are setting the sandbox up for players to explore stories with each other. So, for example, at a table, you might have a couple of characters, you have a party that's working together towards a goal. In a LARP, you can have two parties that are actually the antagonists for each other. And rather than the storyteller, it's those players, which mixes it up dramatically. You know, it's not worrying about what Alex thinks of as a threat. It's what this half dozen other people think of or could think of as a threat to your goals.
What do you think the biggest challenge is for somebody who is walking into a LARP game for the very first time? Like, they have their character, they've got their costume all set, and they roll up. What happens?
The biggest challenge any new player will have is feeling silly.
Sure.
Absolutely the case. It's just like improv or theater or anything else. You have to separate yourself out from the kind of real world considerations about play, because you're playing a game, like, you know. So a lot of that involves costuming. Getting out of your shell and being able to talk to strangers is like a big part of it. The good news is that if you're able to do that, it translates to real world skills. You know, being able to kind of like get outside of yourself, go with the flow. You know, in improv they say yes and, mm-hmm, never know. Right? Like, these are real life skills you can build just by playing.
Because you do such a good job of it. But like, how do you deliver the story, not week after week, because we do bi-weekly, first and third, but, you know, session after session, because you have sometimes as many as 100 people who all have these incredibly high expectations because you've raised the bar and set the standard so high for yourself.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Seriously, how do you deal with that? Because that's a lot for somebody who is running a game or anything to deal with. But then when you take it out from the table and the six people that you were talking about, and now you have, you know, 100 people show up to a LARP event and, you know, the expectations are high. Everybody has different questions, different concerns. How do you manage that? My God, I can't, it's giving me heart palpitations and I'm sweating a bit.
One of the most important pieces is I have a good staff. So right. I depend on other people who are very talented. My friend Neil, in the last Chronicle, my friend Matt, and John, and we kind of like dig into plot concepts, game it out, kind of look at how it interplays with the group as a whole. And then what we like to do is we like to create parts of the story for each group of people, mm-hmm. smaller groups, and weave them into that, and then weave the stories together so that when your group encounters another group, you have different pieces of a puzzle, and together it's kind of a revelation. And one of the coolest things about the World of Darkness, this is actually a very unique part of an RPG, is the heart of the game is pathos. You know, like it's called the World of Darkness, for God's sake, right?
Yeah, so right, yeah.
Pathos is a huge part of it, which means catharsis is another big part of it. And that's what I think people really enjoy at the end of the game.
How do you plan it out so that everybody can get a fair opportunity to go ahead and have and experience something magical each and every time out with your LARP?
It does take a lot of kind of like observation, I think. So you see who is invested in the plot. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see who shares the plot, because the other part of it is when you give people some plot things, sometimes they like to hide them. They like to keep them as their own secrets that they can wield against each other, which is part of it. That's fine too. But you want to also make sure enough little particles are spread, little hooks, over the entire game. And you do that with people who are engaging. You also do it with people who are new, which is a great way to do it. And then once people realize these plot hooks are being dropped, they interact with those players. So you get a new person into the game. At the same time, you're spreading your story for maximum effect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Have you ever had a player, I don't know how to put this, but have you ever had a player outplay you during the game? Like a player who just did something that was completely unexpected, totally out of left field. And like, has there ever been a situation where you like were scrambling
Absolutely.
For an answer? Yeah.
All the time. Happens all the time. My secret is I have a good poker face and I'm pretty good at improv. So right. I just roll with it.
Yeah.
And then they think, oh, he saw that coming, but I'm just lying. And it's an utter shock. We had actually an interesting character deal. This person had to do some act. And the character she was playing was an evil character. So I kind of expected her to do the normal bad guy thing. But what she did was she went and found a family and basically reenacted the Frankenstein story. I don't know if you remember, he moves in, hides in the barn of a family and brings yeah. food and stuff. Mm-hmm. She does this for this family of this desperate family and hides and watches them. And it was such a cool little story she made. I was like, yep, you got it. You've got the thing she was trying to get through that.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. Don't touch that dial. Wait, do people still use dials? Rob McCallum Films is back with a vengeance. Power of Grayskull, the definitive history of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which chronicles the ultimate 80s billion-dollar franchise, Masters of the Universe. See exclusive interviews and hear untold stories from the people responsible for creating the World of Eternia, a place full of magic and science, and learn about the craft of creating action figures and animation. Power of Grayskull is just one of our many projects at Rob McCallum Films.
Once again, I have on Alex Scheidler, Desert of Shadows, Las Vegas LARP group right here for you at the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Melinda Barkhouse Ross and me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching, listening. Alex, you've been very explanatory so far as telling everybody about the world of LARP. Melinda, I know you have experienced firsthand some of this LARP action, especially within the world of Vampire the Masquerade. So what are your observations and experiences so far working with Alex on these great LARP campaigns?
Well, I'm still very... You're a newbie? I'm still so new. I squeak when I walk into LARP. I'm very new. And I came in kind of at the tail end of the last Chronicle. Like, everything was already kind of in play. The coteries were already set. People already kind of knew what they were getting into. And there was, some of the Scooby-Doo stuff. We could find clues and solve mysteries, and things were already kind of unfolding. I walked in and I was playing a Ventru, and it turned out that there wasn't a Ventru Primogen. So I ended up in a meeting with the prince the very first time I walked in the door. So that was a pretty eye-opening experience, but it was a lot of fun. And I've met a lot of truly wonderful people through it. And yeah, I'm excited to join the Chronicle from the very beginning. I have plans for my character. I don't know if what I have planned is going to work. I also don't know if she's going to make it past month three, but we'll see what happens. But one of the things that I really loved that Alex does is how active Alex, you are with everybody who joins. When you join the Facebook group for Desert of Shadows, you get the initial welcome, our newest members and all of that kind of stuff. But Alex is always so easy to reach out to. He's always game for questions. It doesn't matter, what kind of question it is or what it's based on. He's always ready to talk about it. And yeah, it's truly a credit, I think, to Alex and his staff, the level of fun and the level of, involvement that I think everybody feels when they walk into specifically the Desert of Shadows LARP. Now, I can't speak to, other Vampire the Masquerade LARPs that exist, but I know that this one here in Vegas, I think, is really something special. So I think, Alex, my question out of that is, I know that people who LARP are kind of known to be pretty big nerds. But then when you, for some reason, and I don't know why it is, but when you put Vampire the Masquerade LARP on top of that, it kind of takes the nerd factor to a higher level. Why on earth does it have this reputation, do you think?
Well, first let me say that I'm adding Melinda to my will based on that great summary of how I run the game. I think that, well, let me say, as the eldest nerd, which is how you become the storyteller, you just serve as the eldest.
Right.
One of the nerds. I would say that Vampire is a unique aesthetic. First of all, it's like modern day, so you don't have to wear armor or an elaborate wizard costume, which kind of like makes it much more street wearable. You were asking how it got the reputation of being less nerdy or more nerdy?
More nerdy. Because everything that I see, because I was giving like the medieval LARP a kind of, I was flirting with the idea when I was back in Halifax, because they have a very active scene there. Then when I found out about Vampire the Masquerade LARP, I was like, well, that sounds really fun. And then you Google it and people are like, stay away from Vampire the Masquerade LARP. It is bizarre. But I really didn't experience that when I was there. So either I am bizarre or a Vampire the Masquerade LARP just has a funny reputation.
Well,
I
will say that we've kind of engaged in a very heavy policing of some of the weirder stuff.
Sure.
And now there is some weird stuff. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There are some times where player conflicts spill out from the game into the real world, where you are mad at someone for an outcome that happened in game.
Yeah.
That's just bad sportsmanship. And that kind of does happen. I think in the 90s, when the game was super popular, there was a lot of extreme things that kind of went along with that. Mm. And I also think, as I said earlier about the kind of street playability of it, the fact that it plays in a city, that's right. Another part of why it gets a kind of nerdy reputation. Medieval LARPs you can take to a rural area, so you're not really seeing people do that stuff. But when you play a game in a park, that gets a little stranger. We play in a game store, hidden away from the masses, like a decent collection of 100 so nerds.
Right.
So let me ask you this. Any last things you want to go ahead and plug? Any last things you want people to know if they're in the Las Vegas area, or even if they're not, about your awesome LARP group?
I would, of course, love anybody who wants to come play Vampire and is in the area of Las Vegas to swing on by, play Desert of Shadows, our Vampire game. But if you're not nearby, you should check out any LARP group around you. Give it a shot. See what you think. Don't let a perception or a meme online determine how you can experience fun. I mean, you're only shutting yourself off from an opportunity. So give it a shot.
How does one start their own LARP?
Well, you have to be insane first. That's part of it.
Right.
But once you have that under your belt, it's really about putting it out there, getting everything set up, finding a location, and then marketing the game. So you have to get all the ducks in a row for playing first. And don't be afraid to start a game with 10 people. You know, you build from something like 10 or 20 people.
Right.
And I think it's really about the journey, not necessarily starting at your destination.
Fantastic. If anybody wanted to reach out to you for some advice or anything like that, are you open to that?
My DMs are open.
Fantastic.
How can they get a hold of you?
You can either email me at narratorsulla, S-U-L-L-A, at gmail.com. Or if you join the Desert of Shadows Facebook group, I am there. You can message me there.
Awesome indeed. It is Alex Schuyler of the Desert of Shadows Las Vegas LARP group. Alex, I cannot thank you enough for being part of today's show. You're always welcome back. The red carpet, Melinda and I have actually rolled out for you. So you're welcome back.
Very
to
nice.
Go ahead and tell us about more adventures in LARP group. Any last thoughts before we head on out?
Well, I actually like to talk to you about how amazing your guys' show has been. I've had a great time being on here. Your questions are insightful and interesting. Sure. And I think that Melinda in particular has had some wonderful insights on my storytelling ability. And I appreciate her bringing those to the world.
Absolutely. She's tremendous for us here. And I'm glad she's tremendous for your group as well.
Guys are making me all sweaty. Stop. Stop.
Stop.
Stop.
I'll tell you what. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you.
This is the Pop Culture Cosmos. If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games. And we're back with the show. It's Gerald Glassford right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Thanks so much for watching and listening. We truly appreciate it. The sports card scene and collectible scene is still going strong, even after a huge, huge rise during the pandemic. It is still a marketplace out there that everybody seems to like and enjoy. And I'll tell you what, I just had the experience last weekend of going to the MGM Grand Garden and Casino into their convention center here in Las Vegas, right on the Strip. I got a chance to see one of the premier high-end collectible and sports card spectaculars called the Mint Collective. Just had a chance to go there. Great time, sponsored by eBay. Had a great time seeing all the major booths, including eBay, Panini, PSA, Topps. All the big boys were there. And even some of the major independent card dealers were there. It was just so fascinating because you got to see all the high-end cards were there from all the different sports. Got to see high-end Pokemon cards as well. Well, that just got me thinking, how can I go ahead and talk about what's going on in the sports card scene? Because I'm not the expert, but I wanted to bring someone back who is. Good man indeed. You got to go ahead and check him out at Game Time Sports Collectibles. It is Rob Dolby live from his store.
Yeah.
Rob, great to have you here. So I love the ambiance, people buying and selling and trading sports cards. How you been, my man?
Good, man. How have you been?
I've been okay. You know, I got a real education going through there. And it was so, you probably would have found it, you know, right at home at the Mint Collective. Go there. It wasn't the largest sports card show I've ever been to. And actually, when I did sell cards long time ago, you know, there were larger space-wise, but this was all in the convention center, MGM Grand Ballroom. It was about 70, maybe 80 different vendors that were there, but a very high-end, tens of thousands of dollars of cards, single cards were there, you know, some of the most valuable and premier sports cards, both modern and also vintage. Every conceivable rookie or valuable sports card for every modern or vintage athlete was there. It was just such a fascinating thing. Plus, also PSA was there grading cards right on the spot. Get this, Rob. Every other booth literally had their phone right there doing live breaks, because you got to know the lingo when you go there. You got to know breaks, pulls, slabs. You got to know the lingo when you go into these places like that. Every other booth had a live break. Oh, it's a Derek Jeter rookie card. Wow. You know, that goes something like that. Or, you know, or if it's Pokemon, it's a Charizard, you know, something like that. But it was just so funny to see how everything was taking place. But the value of sports cards is there. Please give me the update, since you live and breathe and deal with this on a daily basis. What's your thoughts on the sports card scene and also the collectible card scene truly is at this time?
So actually, if we go back, let's say, I think I was on here about 6 months ago or so with you.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit longer than that. If we go back to about October, early November of this past year, 2022, I have to admit, as somebody who makes their living doing this, I was getting a little nervous. I was getting a little scared. It was kind of, how is Topps Fanatics, how are they going to play into this? You know, Fanatics buying them. How well are they going to interact with me? How are they going to accept me on? Because it used to be very difficult to get direct with Topps. And I assumed with Fanatics moving into it, it would be even more difficult. But I was scared. You know, we were seeing a lack of sales, both hobby boxes and singles in the shop, that sort of thing. But times have changed. And, you know, you move forward, you know, those 5-6 months, and you see that Fanatics has done a really good job. There were some shaky incidents in the beginning, but they've done a really good job of letting us get on board. And I have since become direct with Topps. That has ran very smoothly. And the card market has been, I just went through, actually, Christmas wasn't great, but right after Christmas, I just went through probably a couple best months that I'd had, most consistent months I'd had selling sports cards. People are still buying, people are still selling. And I put on a show on the south side of Columbus, and that show, just this last time in March, it had one of the biggest turnouts I'd ever seen. And then the other good thing about that is it was, you know, I'm doing it every month. I saw 25 to 30% new people that it didn't know about the show. This was without, you know, any additional marketing effort on our part. And same thing with the shop, more people coming in, didn't know you were here, that sort of thing, without any additional marketing efforts. So the hobby is, you know, alive and well. I know it sounds cliche, but it's alive and well.
When you walked into the MGM Grand Ballroom, the first thing you see is the Topps booth. And now, it wasn't a huge booth per se, but it was modern, very clean cut looking. First side is coming at you with the Topps side, but on the flip side is, like you said, Fanatics. And they did have, you know, Fanatics, I think, knows in this space, it needs to still promote the Topps brand first and not just say, oh yeah, we're going to go ahead and take over everything and things of that nature. I think they played it very smart.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely do. And one of the other things, you know, as they've moved into operating Topps and kind of controlling it, again, there was a couple hiccups. There was a hiccup with Topps Chrome. Topps Chrome was a huge release, and they actually missed in the packaging getting the Julio Rodriguez short print. That caused that product to kind of tank. It was just a packaging error, but so many of us lost money on that product. But then they tried to make it up by doing special packs. But then they did this program called the MVP buyback program, where the basic Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt card, you can take to your local hobby shop for $20 for a basic card that, you know, probably books at $1, $1.50. Yeah. And that was a very good program. I mean, we did hundreds and hundreds of extra dollars, if not thousands, because people would bring those cards in and then exchange it for, you know, merchandise we had in the shop. So they did a really good job there. But one of the other things that's very interesting is if you're familiar with the TCGI side of things, like Pokemon and stuff, they'll kind of release products in waves. They'll let it kind of dry up and kind of go back and release it. That's not heard of really in the sports card industry, but now Topps seems to have been doing that. So they'll release a wave, they'll let it dry up, and then maybe 2 or 3 months later, it's a product you can reorder. They're really trying to strike that good balance there of supply and demand, I think.
So they're taking lessons from outside the traditional sports cards industry. I like that. Thinking outside, yes. Pardon the pun, you're thinking outside the box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you is YouTube's been around for a ton of time and social media space has now been out for, you know, well over a decade. But really in the past couple of years, we've seen a huge increase in the number of sports card entities, sports card pools, collectible pools per se, as far as just cards pulling breaks of new packs, new boxes, new sets on camera, on live. Has that really grown the industry as well? Has it made it more approachable for a regular audience? Because it seems to be something that so many, and as I saw right there on the show floor, so many are doing this today.
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe that social media in general, but of course breaks, have been playing a major impact in the increase of the hobby, in its growth, especially among young people. And is this allocation business really got out of control? Some people would say it fueled it, which it may have helped fuel it. But at the same time, you know, when a price of a box began to hit $300 and $400 and $500 for your average hobby box of, say, basketball or football product, breaking allowed that individual to say, I just collect the Cincinnati Reds, for instance. So I'm going to go into this break and I'm going to put down $20 and I'm going to get all the Cincinnati Reds, which made you have the ability to get a piece of a very large expensive pie, basically, made it affordable for you. So I do believe that it has played a major role in kind of keeping the industry going. And that's the thing, innovation, new styles of doing things is kind of keeping it interesting.
Now, you said you had some notes as far as what the industry is doing to attract not only new customers, but retain its base. Because, again, you know, individuals that are collecting now this hobby, if they don't see the market trending the way they wanted to, they can, you know, obviously allocate their funds into something else. So what is the industry doing at this point in time, in your opinion, based off your notes?
Okay. Well, one of the things that they're really doing is, you know, with COVID, it went crazy. Prices went crazy. And again, with Topps and Fanatics, you know, it was kind of a question. Well, am I only going to get two boxes of this? And you know, what's the allocation going to look like? Well, they're actually doing a really good job of just getting enough product out there. And I think they're trying to strike that balance where let's get enough product out there where there's plenty of product for collectors at a reasonable price, but not so limited that it's tempting for others to like try to flip products, to go into your Walmart, clear the shelves off or whatever, hold it for 6 weeks, and then, you know, try to make a really big profit on it. They're keeping enough product flowing that for those that are true collectors, set builders, guys that just collect certain teams, they're able to get their hands on products again. And like basketball, for instance, we've seen it dramatically come down in price. Now, when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about sealed products. I'm not speaking about single cards in general, but being able to have your hands on sealed products again, your ability to kind of have access to your favorite sport and bust cards again is a very important part of this hobby. And again, it is coming down. It's getting more affordable. Baseball, for the most part, especially when that first couple of weeks when it comes out, everything, just about everything anyway, 90% of things are at suggested retail prices. You're able to get one of your favorite boxes, let's say for $100, $150 again, which was unheard of during COVID. So I think they're trying to do that thing where there are high-end products. They are targeting some people that maybe are into breaking the big, you know, hitting the big card or whatever, or investing for the future. But the majority of their products, they're aiming right at collectors. They're aiming at kids again. A Big League Baseball that just came out about a week and a half ago, it was nothing to go through a case of that because it was a $55 a box product. And kids just loved it. They made it look, you know, appealing this year. Even the boxing, the product packaging was nice. So we just flew through that product. So I think they're doing things. Now, Panini's got some unanswered questions out there. We don't know how they're going to play into the Fanatics plan, if they're going to sell to Fanatics, what they're going to do. But they're about a year and a half from losing their license and their ability to produce licensed football and basketball cards.
And that's going to be a major thing, like you said, if they don't start playing, pardon the pun again, ball.
Yeah.
With Fanatics, they could find themselves out on the street pretty quickly. I do want to ask, though, you know, again, the sports car scene, as I saw, is still very much doing well, thriving. I mean, the action that I saw on the showroom floor in regards to valuable cars is still there. The values are still at a premium. What about as far as on the end, as far as I talked a little bit about Pokemon, but what about non-sports cars? How are those moving for you? I know the Star Wars is a great thing that I see a lot at your store and your pictures from your location. But also when I was out there at also the Mint Collective, Star Wars, obviously, of course, Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, talking about their new cooperation with the Lord of the Rings. People are talking about that and trying to get that one ring card, which is only one, which is supposed to be super valuable, which will probably be sold at an auction down the road for millions of dollars, I'm assuming. But how is the non-traditional sports card scene, how is that doing at this point in time?
As far as non-sports go, I personally don't have a large, you know, stake in that, except, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon especially. We do move a lot of Pokemon. But yeah, like you mentioned, Star Wars, for instance, Topps, again, released a very decent product, decent checklist. You know, that's really what it comes down to a lot of times with the autograph checklist for these non-sports. You know, is Harrison Ford, you know, for instance, in that Star Wars product, at least as a possibility, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, that there was a Star Wars signature series, which was just a one hit, one autograph per box kind of thing that just came out. And again, we moved through that very nicely. I think as we're able to get our hands on more non-sports, we'll be able to do that. I know one of my buddies in my shop, you know, even though I kind of own the business independently, in our shop, it's a cooperation of three of us. We've been, you know, lifelong friends. My one buddy has taken an entire display case, and his name's Bill, and he's taken an entire display case, and that entire display case is non-sports. We're talking like Pop Century Leaf stuff, all autographs of people, you know, from Yellowstone, or even back in the day, Saved by the Bell, stuff like that. So he's really into that. And he's like, I'm not sure how well it's selling. You know, it's moving here and there, but I just love collecting it. So that's where he's kind of had his focus too.
So funny. Sort of I could see Topps going to Harrison Ford and him just like grumbling throughout signing that one card.
He probably sold three in the entire product line. It's just probably true.
What am I doing there signing this thing? I don't do autographs. I can't even stand Star Wars. You know, I could just see him just grumbling through the whole process because he has disdain for the Han Solo character, as we've seen and read in articles and interviews over the course of time. But getting back to the sports card scene, seems now that you've turned a corner with Fanatics and are looking forward to a better future with that company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, like they make it very smooth. The relationship's been very easy to deal with. Very, very good relationship, and it's fair. You know, for me personally, I'm getting allocated a case of everything. I think that's pretty normal for those that are just coming on board, just to get that one case. And there's still other opportunities. You pay just a few bucks more and go to a distributor, and maybe you get a few boxes there too. And that's been the case for me. They've kind of kept their hand out of the secondary market, which is probably good. You know, they're the basic model of, you know, we have a cost of producing this. We're going to mark it up, you know, 5%, 10%, 20%, whatever it is. And that's the price. You know, they're not going to the secondary market and going, well, we can probably get, you know, $400 a box out of this or whatever. They're just looking at the cost of producing the product and moving forward. Again, you know, there's concerns about Panini. Now, if you do this, the business model has changed. You go back 2 years ago, I could just sit here and, you know, our shop's small. You know, I have to move on the website. I have to go out and do shows. I have to go do those things because we're seeing 5 to 7 customers a day, except for maybe Saturdays. You know, that's about what we're seeing. So I don't move enough product at only making, you know, $10 to $15, $20 is a good day on a box of cards to just sit back and allow it to happen here. But that has to be the model now. It has to be move. It has to be a little bit of a turn and burn, staying in the marketing season of that product. You know, its time frame and you have a few weeks there to move it. And there for a while during COVID, we were all able to just kind of sit back, let it sit on the shelf. And 5 weeks later, if it didn't sell, we raised it $40. Yeah. But, you know, we're kind of out of that time frame. You know, I'm not making $40 and $50 a box. I'm making $15 a box. But I'm turning a lot more product. And that's just kind of the way you have to go about it. And I'm sure with singles, too, you know, it has to be that. You have to be out there. If you're trying to make a living, you have to turn the product. But in general, I think a lot of this is really good news for the customer, for the collector, for the people that are, you know, coming in. There's competition again, and there's products available. So you do have choices.
One last thing I want to ask you is about, obviously, the one of the main reasons why the value on the specific cards varies is the grading process. And while PSA, when I went to the Mint Collective, dominated the scene, yes, there were also other grading services. And then there was also Beckett in the corner, yes, as well.
Yes.
Beckett was literally in the corner. Yes, in the corner. It was a nice booth, per se, but it was in the corner, as opposed to PSA, which actually had the long lines of people going and trying to get their cards graded live on the spot. Now, I ask you, the grading of cards, specific cards, are so important to the value of the cards, obviously for the collectors, high-end collectors and whatnot. What has your process been, or what has your experience has been with grading at this point? Because it seems like PSA is obviously at this point in time the most dominant force in the grading card industry.
By far, PSA is the most dominant. Now, if you'd go back, say, 5 to 7 years, Beckett would have been right in the mix.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, not anymore.
No, not really anymore. They've definitely went to second fiddle, and maybe even a close second with some of the other companies like SCG and things like that. So some of those companies came up. Now, there are a lot of, I hate to say it, but mom and pop grading companies. And, you know,
they were there as well.
Yeah. And it's very tough. You know, we have customers come in and they'll be like, hey, I got this graded by, you know, PNT or whatever. And we're like, PNT, like, we have no idea what that is. You may as well just break it out of that encapsulated thing. We're not going to pay you any more than a raw card for that. And then you're mentioning Beckett, and just about a week ago, Beckett made some big announcement of how they're going to change their grading. And it was very, very confusing. A 9.5, if you got a 9.5 on the corners, but a 9.5 on the centering, but a 10 on, you know, the surface wear or whatever, it was going to go to a 10 now. It was very confusing. And they were in trying to basically get people to resubmit their cards because, well, now it would be a lot easier to get a Beckett 10 instead of a Beckett 9.5. But then what do you do with all those cards that are already out there on the market? And then Beckett, I've heard, started to back off that statement they made and about that plan to do that. So it does seem that PSA is, you know, back and open and ready for business. And it does seem like they're kind of set to kind of run away and get a pretty huge lead on the others that are involved in grading.
I saw that firsthand, my friend. I tell you right there, because you could see the line for PSA literally going out of the ballroom as far as Beckett. Well, let's just say it was a nice looking booth. But
yeah, yeah, I get you.
And I'll leave it at that. But Rob, it's been great chatting with you. I know you're busy in the store. Obviously, everybody should check out your website, GameTimeSportsCollect.com. But please, when it comes to Game Time Sports Collectibles, anything anyone needs to know about how they can get a hold of what you got as far as your inventory, take a look at it, or, you know, if they were asking more questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they can just stop by the website. It'll give you links to all the social media. You know, we have a Game Time Sports Collect is one of our Facebooks, but we also have Game Time Collectibles, which is actually the shop. And we do a weekly Facebook Live there where we just kind of throw out hobby information. It's every Wednesday, and you can check that out. But again, you can just go to the website and you can find information about all that.
Thanks so much, Rob, for stopping by right here at the Pop Culture
Cosmos. Thank you.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
Well, Melinda, appreciate so much you being part of today's show. Alex Scheidler was on today's show, also as well Rob Dolby. Any last thoughts before we head on out?
Yeah, if you are in the Las Vegas area, and even if you just want to come and see what the Desert of Shadows LARP is about, you can do that. You can show up as a guest. and you get to do what we all do. You'll get a chance to wander around, and you'll get to catch players taking part in a scene and all of that kind of stuff. If you're curious about setting up your own LARP, reach out to Alex. Alex is truly a stand-up dude. I like him a lot. I always have time for Alex. And I think that once you dip your toe into the pool and then you're like, wait a minute, I can build my own character. I can do my costuming, and then I can show up and just sort of kind of do what I want. It's pretty fun. There's something liberating and freeing in it. And if you're in the Las Vegas area and you're at all intrigued, please check it out.
There you go. Go and check out Alex and Melinda. You never know, she might be there as well today at Deserts of Shadows, Las Vegas LARP group. So for Melinda Barkhouse Ross, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the Pop Culture Cosmos. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.